very thought-provoking and enjoyable presentation. We're moving straight on to hear Professor Torrance, who is speaking to us on robot ethics, fantasy or necessity. Brief introduction to Steve Torrance. He has researched in philosophy of artificial intelligence and cognitive science for over 25 years. He has published many articles and collections of papers on issues concerning conceptual and ethical foundations of artificial personhood. In the last year, he has edited a collection of papers on ethics and artificial agents for a special issue of the journal AI and Society, which is being published early this year, and is the lead editor for a special issue of the journal of Consciousness Studies last year on machine consciousness, embodiment and creativity. He is Professor Emeritus in Cognitive Science at Middlesex University and a visiting Senior Research Fellow in the Philosophy of Artificial Intelligence and Cognitive Science Group at the University of Sussex. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, I thought everything I would say would already have been said by the previous speakers, but this area is so vast, in fact, there's quite a lot here. Not everything, but quite a lot is probably a little bit different. Hopefully complementary, not too contradictory. What I'm going to try to talk about, to develop this afternoon, is two views on robots as moral agents, one of which is very close at hand, and it's based upon the idea that, as Kirsten was saying, robots as we know them today are never really going to be morally real creatures because they don't have the intelligence, the sentience, and so on. So, in that sense, robot rights and robot ethics is a bit of a fantasy. You know, maybe people talk about it, but it'll never happen. Well, it's not, unless one has a radically different kind of design for artificial agents, which perhaps is more like replicating the biology, human or animal biology, building them from the bottom up. But there's another kind of view, which is really to look at the idea of robot ethics in a different kind of way, and say that actually it's got to happen. We actually have, as robot technology proliferates, and as more and more robots come into homes, into factories, into the streets, into battlefields, into the bedroom, and so on, there will be enormous ethical issues, some of which have been raised by the previous speakers, and there has to be a lot of thinking about what kinds of ethical constraints need to be built into the technology and needs to, if you like, condition the technologists, not necessarily the agents that they're building. So I'm going to try and show that these two views aren't necessarily incompatible. Of course, it depends on what you mean by moral agency, how you actually evaluate the question of robots as moral agents. So what I'm going to cover, the major things I'm going to cover is, first of all, give you a run very quickly through something that has already been said in by maybe both the speakers. There's a deep way of understanding robotics, and there's a shallow way of understanding robotics. And I just want to try to make that distinction in the way that I'd like to set it up. And then talk a bit about ethics, and just make an important differentiation between two ways in which anyone or anything that is going to be a moral agent could be a moral agent. One involves what I call moral production, one involves moral consumption. Thirdly, I want to introduce, discuss something that both the previous speakers talked about a little bit, just to negatively brush it away from the picture, which is consciousness, and just try to bring that back in and so we can get a bit clearer about how it relates to the topic this afternoon. And then look at issues to do with robot ethics, since robots aren't likely to be conscious ever, or at least not for a long time, perhaps with radically different kinds of designs, looking at robot ethics without consciousness and maybe seeing some other aspects of robot ethics to the ones that have been raised by Kirsten. So that's more or less what I hope to do in the next 35, 40 minutes. So obviously robots have this, there's this double picture, as Kirsten's already mentioned this, robots can be seen as tools, they could be seen as embryonic persons, there are all sorts of issues involved in when people mistakenly take them too much as having too many personal properties. There could be dangers here, but there could also be possibilities, for example, in the case of autistic children, as Kirsten's work has validly showing. So they're really, you could, without wanting to use these terms in any pejorative way, you could refer to a sort of deep approach to robotics and a shallow approach to robotics. The deep approach being more maybe academic, less practical, but more concerned with, you know, the future idea of robots actually entering in some sense into our social realm. Depending on whether you take robotics in the shallow way or the steep way, you see either see robots as tools or you see them as maybe potential companions in our society. The shallow social issues involve things like the responsible use of the technology, avoiding danger, distress, and so on. And it's part of the general drive towards developing responsible technology in other spheres, for example, responsible nanotechnology and so on. And really we're here in the realm of human-centered ethics, which is something that we, that both previous speakers have been discussing in relation to our topic. And there are many studies, for example, the Euron network has produced what they call a robo ethics roadmap, which actually stresses that they're interested mainly in the ethics of robotics as it affects us, that the users of robots as tools, rather than as it affects the robots, which they see as a not very meaningful thing to talk about. On the other hand, I think it is important to talk about it, and certainly something that, if one is interested only in the immediate future, it's maybe an area that one doesn't have to get disappear into like a black hole, but I think they're important issues to be involved to discuss here. So I'm hoping that we can also look at some of these more radical ethical implications where we might come to see ourselves as having responsibilities towards robots and maybe to have robots as having responsibilities towards us and possibly towards each other. So this is, you know, the idea of robot-centered ethics. And although this, it's easy to just dismiss this, it is probably worth looking at some kind of examination in order to see the conditions under which it might be relevant to maybe some future epoch in society and the conditions under which it won't. There may be some intervening period in which some strands of robot-centered ethics may actually need to be taken seriously sooner rather than later. Just mention here, there is has been since, I think, 1999, an American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Robots, which is modelled on a similar society for the prevention of cruelty to animals. The points they made are worthy, but I think somewhat misguided at the moment, because they do take seriously this idea that the robots are sentient creatures. It just shows that there are people who are worried about it, even now, possibly misguided. Of course, this is based upon the difference between taking an instrumental stance towards robots or other kinds of technologies and taking an intrinsic stance. And robot-centered ethics implies perhaps taking an intrinsic stance, but perhaps the boundaries between the two might be blurred in some of the ways that we will be discussing, like effective attitudes towards certain kinds of robots. Obviously, it doesn't just affect robots, it affects lots of other things. Here you can see the difference between the instrumental and the intrinsic stance towards chickens. And, perhaps we have to think about similar kinds of ways of approaching robots. One reason why it's important, I think, is because of if robotics is a successful technology, then it's likely to proliferate very rapidly, like mobile phones. things like the internet, like personal computers and so on. And it could become a future techno play, rather than the way that many people see cars today, because of all the environmental problems and the safety problems, and the way it's changed, the way they've changed the shape of society in certain ways. And perhaps we think of ourselves now as being somewhat in the position of those people who were building cars towards the end of the 19th century and thought of them as, you know, interesting machines doing interesting things that possibly could be of useful to a few people, but not really thinking very seriously about what if everybody owned a car, or at least one car. What would it be like to live in a world where there's only cars, and maybe where the numbers of people in the world had also increased. So if maybe this kind of democratic issues had been discussed then, there might have been some significant changes in the way that car technology might have been developed over the ensuing decades. A similar thing might be true of robotics. So, so moving to robot-centered ethics, I'm just going to try and develop the idea of it and try to show that there are two aspects to robot-centered ethics, the idea of robots as moral agents. First of all, there's the idea of robots as moral producers, that is, having responsibilities or obligations, doing things that are subject to appraisal in different ways, moral appraisal, or other forms of appraisal, like health and safety appraisal. Robots as perhaps morally autonomous agents, maybe not just functionally autonomous, but actually having some kind of morally autonomous, moral autonomy in the way that philosophers like Kant and others have thought of us as being autonomous. So trying to think of what is involved in the idea of a robot that is doing things that we morally value or morally condemn for different kinds of reasons. But there's another way of thinking of robots as moral agents, which is as moral consumers, in others as having their own needs or preferences or interests, in which case the issue there is that they will generate in us moral obligations or responsibilities or duties of ethical concern towards them, and may be generated in other robots similar or comparable duties of concern. So that it seems to me that that's an important distinction to make. So it could be represented pictorially. You can imagine this yellow blob as a sort of moral agent. Either it could be a person or an animal, a chicken, or it could be a robot. And you can see the difference between these two relationships as the two ways in which the arrow can point. On the one hand, in the case of moral consumption, the moral community has duties towards the moral agent. And on the other hand, in the case of moral production, that the agent has duties or responsibilities towards the moral community, towards the totality of moral agents. Well, this way of putting it actually is a bit misleading, because it makes it look as though this yellow blob is standing outside the moral community. So it's perhaps better to see it like that, that it's actually, of course, itself a member of the community. Now, moral production and consumption, moral consumption, don't necessarily go hand in hand. Because clearly, again, chickens may be considered to be moral consumers, those who have concerns about battery farming and so on, may see them as being moral consumers in the sense that we have obligations towards humane production of chickens. Possibly not even to many people, obviously, think we have obligations not to eat them, let alone not just to how we rear them. But clearly, chickens aren't considered as having moral responsibilities themselves, because they're not. So clearly, you can have the one without the other. Maybe robots might, because of their intelligence, because of their functional capabilities, have certain moral responsibilities, or come to adopt certain moral responsibilities without being moral consumers, because perhaps they don't have sentience or whatever we consider to qualify them to have moral rights or moral claims upon our ethical concern towards them. So the two things don't necessarily cohere together. Well, taking the notion of a moral agent in either of those two senses, there are various things that could people might think of as being required in order for a robot to qualify as a moral agent. Here's a list of some of the ones that have been discussed in the literature. It might just be rationality. Clearly, you could have several of these, but some people have argued for one or a few of these as having more importance. So rationality, intelligence might be one kind of characteristic. Autonomy, which as I'll show in a minute, has got many different facets to it. Closely associated idea of free will. Many people say unless you have some kind of free choice, you can't be considered a moral agent at all. Maybe robots are too mechanical for moral agency to apply. Sentience or consciousness, in the sense of being able to feel pain or pleasure or satisfaction or distress, emotions of different sorts, emotional feelings. Maybe another aspect of consciousness, which is self-awareness, being aware of oneself, of one's states, maybe having a model of oneself in some sense that guides one's actions. Being able to have a kind of imaginative capability, having effective capabilities, being able to display or show emotional states in some way, having the ability to empathize in some sense with others, with other people, with humans or with other robots, having a kind of teleology, that is being the subject of purposes rather than just acting in certain ways that appear to have a teleological structure to them that actually don't count as genuine purposes or genuine goals. Being able to perform in ways that are at the level of human capabilities in some respects. So these are many of the things that are discussed, that could be discussed and have been discussed in relation to the idea of artificial agents as moral agents. I'm just going to pick out one or two of those, and the main ones I'm going to pick out are autonomy, consciousness, sentience in particular, and just go back to the list to remind myself. Teleology, yeah, sorry. So in the case of autonomy, I think it's important to distinguish between at least three kinds of autonomy. You can make many more distinctions if you wish, but this will do for now. Functional autonomy. For example, you think of the car, the automobile itself could have been considered as more functionally autonomous than a carriage which required a horse to pull it. And a car that can navigate itself is more autonomous, more functionally autonomous than a car that we have to drive. Similarly, battlefield robots are now being produced and being called autonomous robots because they can be left to do things in the battlefield which don't actually require a close, fine-grained command and control by human agents. And therefore, they're being considered as written about as autonomous. And some people are discussing the kind of autonomy which is involved in robots in warfare situations, as though it actually implied a kind of moral autonomy and maybe a responsibility for their actions that would release humans from having to take the cab if an autonomous robot were to do something unpleasant, like a fire on civilians or whatever. Organic autonomy refers to the fact that an organism, any biological organism, has may be considered to be an autonomous self-maintenance system, in the sense that it actually it doesn't need some outside agency to make it continue in its life. It is all the time, a biological system is all the time acting in ways that will keep itself in life and keep itself able to survive and to thrive as far as possible in its environment. That gives a very different notion of autonomy, because it seems to be ongoing, dynamic, in a sense that perhaps machines, robots, are currently not, isn't available to robots currently. And finally, there's the notion of moral autonomy, which again has been means a number of things, but at least it means the ability to take responsible choices and therefore to be responsible for one's actions. Now, another notion that I want to talk about is consciousness and an attendant notion of empathy. And one of the reasons why people are sceptical about robots being members of the moral community now in the foreseeable future is that to be either a moral consumer or a moral producer, in the sense that I referred to earlier, seems to require sentience or some kind of consciousness, what's called phenomenal consciousness. And that reasons for saying this are that, for example, in order to have a truly ethical response as a what I call a moral producer, that is, in order to understand why we think it's right to stop people from, you know, killing or hurting others unnecessarily, is because of our ability to effectively identify with the plight of others, because we can imagine ourselves in that situation. It's not just enough to perform actions because they're right, you might argue. It's, you need this ability to have a kind of first-hand appreciation of how others might suffer or benefit. So even as a kind of a responsible robot, in order for it to be considered as truly responsible, it would, on this argument, need to have the ability for this sort of empathetic identification. And that, in its turn, would seem to require it to be, at least in principle, able to experience those states itself. And that's, again, seems to require a kind of conscious ability, which very few of us believe robots will have now or in the long-term future. So so empathy, in a way, is a little bit like the sort of John Malkovich film, where John Malkovich stands there and sees a whole room full of people looking just like him. But in a sense, the ethical response seems to involve seeing everyone as a kind of version of yourself, so that you can put yourself in the shoes of each person in turn. Well, notwithstanding the difficulties there are with the idea of machines or robots as ethical agents, there has been quite a lot of work done on it. There are just a couple of collections of papers. One in an American IEEE journal came out in 2006, and collection that was mentioned earlier that I put together for Journal AI and Society that's coming out in print in a few months, that's out online. And there's a lot of other work that I could mention. So people are discussing machine ethics, and some of that discussion involves what I call sort of shallow machine ethics, which is just, you know, trying to produce models of ethical thinking. For example, deontic logic systems that could be used to control robots so that they can make choices that we regard as ethical, we regard as ethically right, but without there being any pretension that the robots themselves have got any kind of ethical responsibility. But there are also people discussing the more long-term issues. So there are various gradations of machine ethics, just sort of computational modelling on the one hand, building robots that incorporate some kind of ethical simulation still aren't considered as ethical in their own right. Developing ethically responsible robots in some senses where you believe that they do have responsibilities, perhaps in limited senses, but you're still not perhaps attributing any rich kinds of mental powers or consciousness to them. And then finally, psychologically real mentality, consciousness, where you're thinking of them not perhaps just as moral producers, but also as moral consumers, that is, as deserving our moral concern in various sorts of ways. Maybe when we get to that stage, it brings in questions like, should we switch them off? So, which is something that Nick mentioned earlier. The issue of consciousness has also been discussed in relation to robots and artificial agents in general, and there have been a couple of recent issues of the Journal of Consciousness Studies, the first of which came out in 2003, was edited by Owen Holland, who's sitting here, and a more recent one that was edited by myself and Robert Clowes and Robert Chrisley from Sussex University, came out last year. And again, so in general, the articles in these issues have mainly been discussing questions to do with both modelling and attributing consciousness. But some of the articles, particularly my one, and one by Tom Zinker, have actually raised some of the ethical issues involved. Here's an example of research in machine consciousness. Again, I put this in before I knew that Owen would be here today. He's going to be much more able to explain if you want to ask him later. But this is Kronos on the left, a humanoid robot that at the moment just sits on a table, but maybe eventually will be walking around. Designed to approximate as far as possible to being conscious in some rich sense. And as I understand it, and forgive me if I mangle this in explaining it, an important feature of its being conscious is the fact that it has an internal self model, which is implemented as a virtual model called Simnos, which actually enables it to control its interactions with its environment, so that it has some kind of internal imaginative ability to imaginatively consider its actions, as it were, offline, in a way that which is an important way that we use consciousness ourselves. I still think, I believe, as far as I understand, that this is merely intended to be a model of consciousness, not an implementation or a realization of consciousness. But I believe that, I'm not sure whether Owen would agree with this, but some researchers in machine consciousness think that with gradual complication and expansion of the methods that they're using, it may be possible eventually to produce robots that actually genuinely are conscious, that do have conscious awareness, because they implement the necessary functionality of consciousness to the degree which makes us unquestionably say that they have to be conscious, in which case, ethical considerations are likely to click in. Well, what of course we mean by conscious here is a moot matter, and there are many rough equivalences to the use of the term. People talk about awareness, subjectivity, thinking, feeling, inner life, first person point of view, qualitative states, qualia, the term that Nick introduced earlier, phenomenology, having the phenomenology, something that it's like to be, is a term that is derived from a famous paper by Thomas Nagel written in the 70s, which was actually about the consciousness of a bat, about the difficulties of imagining what it was like to be a bat, and it's called, that's what it's called, and that the idea of being conscious as being something that it's like to be like that person or like that entity has sort of stuck in the discussion of consciousness. Some people are very dismissive about the whole idea of trying to get clear philosophically or psychologically on consciousness. Stuart Sutherland wrote this in 1995, consciousness is a fascinating but elusive phenomenon. It's impossible to specify what it is, what it does, or why it's evolved. Nothing worth reading has been written on it. Probably since then, maybe something like, I don't know, several hundreds of books have been published on consciousness, thousands and thousands of papers and websites. And if you just go to David Chalmers' website, you'll be there for a few hundred years.
Lowest forms prefigures mind, and mind, even on its highest reaches,
remains part of the organic. So if you take this view, then robot consciousness seems to be ruled out, unless you're talking about some completely different kind of technology that we haven't really discussed at all today, which is building bio-robots or androids or replicants from the bottom up, which is, I'm just leaving out for brevity. So there's the tie-in between this sort of organic approach to consciousness and ethics is clearly there's a very close association between being phenomenally conscious in ethics, and a truly robot-centered ethics would be a fantasy on this sort of view. But there are actually many ways in which this organic view, much as I like it, there are many ways in which it fails to answer many urgent questions about ethics and robots. And there are many ways in which it could be challenged, either by rejecting this tie-in between biology and phenomenal consciousness that I've just tried to defend, or perhaps by saying that perhaps consciousness isn't necessary for certain kinds of moral status, at least. And it's this second possibility that I want to just briefly explore for the last few minutes of my talk. So what I want to just pursue with you is some facets of a future robot ethics where we're actually not considering these robots as being conscious at all. The question I want you to consider is, are there reasons for giving non-conscious robots some kind of ethical status, notwithstanding the arguments that Kirsten was making about radically differentiating the robots from the kind of empathetic or anthropomorphic reactions to them? Well, one example I want to consider is the case of property ownership. It seems to me that robots could come to have certain kinds of legal status. Legal status isn't itself the same as moral status, but the legal status may carry certain obligations on us, because if they have legal status which grants them similar legal rights as other members of the legal realm, then we have to, it will give us similar moral obligations to humans who have those forms of status. And property ownership might be one such case. So I just want to develop this a little bit. And I'm going to do this on the basis of a bit of science fiction. But then, of course, any speculation we're doing today that doesn't depend upon the actual robots in the laboratory or ones that are envisaged over the next 10 or 20 years is science fiction anyway. So even when we think we're not doing science fiction, we are. Isaac Asimov, and when it's come about, of course, it was science fiction then, it has become a science fact now. If these robots get built, they'll be science fact, but at the time that they were being discussed, before they were built, it was science fiction. In his short story, The Bicentennial Man, which became a novel and then became a movie, the robot Andrew Martin acquires through the courts legal entitlement to own property in his own person. And essentially, he's a very clever, very functionally, highly functional robot that can do all sorts of things, and in fact is able to create exquisite objets d'art, created from pieces of driftwood which come from the seashore near where the family where he's been stationed live. And these exquisite objects become highly prized collector's items. He hasn't super, in this sense, he doesn't have super intelligence, Nick, but he has super physical capabilities. He has highly superhuman capabilities at manipulating these objects. And therefore, that's why they're so highly prized, because they're more delicate than anything that anyone has ever seen. And they get sold by his owner for large amounts of money. And he became, the owner, who's already a very rich lawyer or something, becomes very even richer. And eventually says, well, really, it should be Andrew who should legally own the wealth accumulated from his sales. So he goes through the courts, and wins for Andrew the legal right to have a bank account legally owned wealth accumulated from the sales and so on. Anyway, that's the only bit of the story you really need to know. There's lots more, but you can go and see the movie. The rest of the movie isn't that good, but that bit is quite interesting. Now, so it seems to me that if in this scenario, and I've discussed it with various people, you could actually imagine a kind of legal precedent where robots could have legal rights to own property. But it seems to me, I want to suggest, they would therefore have moral rights. It would be morally wrong to steal from such a person, because it's if you're entitled to own that property, then it's wrong for someone to deprive you of the property. Now, those moral rights don't seem to depend upon our attributing consciousness to Andrew. Later on in the story, he does lots of other things which end up making you believe that he's definitely a conscious being, not just not just a mechanical robot. But at that point in the story, there's no suggestion that his property rights depend upon his being conscious. So it seems to me that we could come, if this proliferation scenario comes about and there are a sufficient number of super cool robots that can actually create things that we value so much that we want to actually pay lots of money for them, money could possibly flow to them, to their owners, and possibly it could be said that they should have the owners of the money themselves, of the property that they use the money to acquire. Now, a robot property owner would also have responsibilities and obligations. For example, not to seek to acquire wealth dishonestly, not to use wealth to attempt to blackmail people, and so on. Now, these obligations are in part legal obligations. Obviously, robots that own wealth and to that extent have legal status will be obliged not to break the criminal law. But they clearly also have a moral force. And a robot resorting to theft or blackmail would be doing something morally wrong as well as criminally. So perhaps a robot, after all, could have moral responsibilities and rights without being conscious or without having biological properties. Even though in this case, I'm just talking about moral rights and duties based upon legal rights and duties. Now, there are other kinds of quasi-moral rights and expectations. General right to have legal personhood, rather than a corporation is now considered to be a legal person. Ownership of copyright and intellectual property rights, for example. To pursue goals that it's been assigned or which it's adopted for whatever purposes it is working for. To have opinions, creative influence, initiatives respected. To confidentiality on information sources, to be obeyed when acting in law enforcement or custodial roles, and so on. There are a whole series of other quasi-legal, quasi-moral rights that robots might have in the different kinds of contexts in which it might be considered. Again, it might be easier to make sense of punishment or reward if one considers property rights, because one could maybe use withholding property or as a form of sanction, which might make sense to us as being a kind of punishment. Kirsten's talked about affective transfer quite a lot, so I won't dwell on that. But obviously, that's another sense in which there could be a kind of quasi-ethical sort of relationship. Robots could also be moral advisors because of their superior computational power. They may help with complex processing of the various strands in ethical decisions, which may make them better at coming to conclusions than we can, because we can't hold all the factors in our head at a given time. I say this with some trepidation, because I think the idea of a robot solving our moral problems might be considered too horrendous, but at least it is a possibility that some people may want to seriously propose, and some of the people in the machine ethics community are proposing such things already. I can talk about that if you want examples. Other people are saying that robots might have a kind of impartiality because of their lack of affect. So if they were sort of part of an ethical decision support system. They actually might be better than humans in certain kinds of mediation or other kinds of moral problem solving. There's also the issue of hardwiring moral constraints. This is just the old point about Asimov's three laws, that in a sense, if they're just hardwired, they're not going to be truly moral responsibilities, because the machine that have these constraints hardwired aren't in any sense, don't have an autonomous ability to choose to act according to them. And there are various other issues, but let me just finally give my conclusions, if I may. So just going back through this investigation of this area, as I said, you can think of robot ethics in two different ways, either from a human centered point of view, so it's really, they're just tools, and we need to think about the ethics of our use of them and our deployment and design of them, or you can think of them in a robot-centric way, in which case you're up against the question, could robots be true moral patients, moral agents? I've suggested that to be a true moral agent in either of those senses, you actually need to have a kind of biological autonomy. And robot-centered ethics, in that sense, is just a fantasy for non-biological artifacts. However, I've suggested that there are certain kinds of ethical status or ethical functionalities that might be incorporated into robot technology. So I think it's useful to talk about a robot para-ethics, to distinguish it from the other kinds of more real ethics. And finally, because of the fact that robots are likely, if they are going to become a successful technology like mobile phones or Saturn has, we urgently need to do further research, both into the conceptual issues and into the practical design issues and codification issues. And probably there needs to be some kind of worldwide agreement on standards, on ethical standards for both for us and, if you like, the para-ethics that should be incorporated into autonomous, functionally autonomous robots. So robot ethics is both a fantasy and a necessity.